yes, I mean, it is important to run a startup. It is absolutely okay to fail. It is absolutely okay to learn and restart, right? But then the objective of getting into a startup, right, should be very, very clear. And it should not be to raise capital. I mean, it should be to build value for everyone involved, right? And it should be to create something meaningful, something disruptive.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Direct to a Billion Consumers. My name is Arjun Vaidya and I'm your host. Today, I'm very excited to have Hitesh Dhingra with me. Hitesh is the founder I have huge respect for. He's the founder of The Man Company, one of my favorite brands in the D2C ecosystem. But what many of you don't know is The Man Company is actually Hitesh's fourth startup already. It's such a pleasure to have the startup man of the D2C community on a show with us. Thanks so much for taking out the time, Hitesh.
Thanks, Arjun. Always pleasure to talk to you. And thanks for having me for this podcast.
So Hitesh, journeys are very important to me. And so I have to ask, you've been a part of India's e-commerce or digital ecosystem since the beginning, right? So through your time with Tairu, Let's Buy, Truly Madly, and now The Man Company, how have you seen e-commerce or digital businesses evolve in India?
Interesting question. Look, so I started e-commerce. I got into e-commerce in 2006. Right. When I think in India, there was eBay trying to do something or the other, or a couple of media conglomerates like India Times and Hindustan Times running their shopping platforms. But at the same time, there was no credible shopping platform to buy electronics. Right. And as a digital marketer, considering I was running a digital agency and performance marketing for a lot of these e-commerce players, I knew that there was one mobile phone being sold on eBay India every 3 minutes. Right. So it was the platform was gaining traction, but it was always either the secondhand products, or if it was a new product, then there was a lot of gray market. Right. So people really lacked the trust in these e-commerce platforms. Right. And that's where I realized that there is probably an opportunity to create a credible platform to sell not just electronics, but we used to call it 3 C's. So consumer electronics, communication and computers and peripherals. So started Let's Buy in 2009. Before that, I was more of an entrepreneur running e-commerce for a Singapore-based distribution, IT distributor. And that was my first job in a way, right? So when I started Let's Buy, Flipkart had started in 2007-8. They were selling books. We were the first platform to get into electronics. And I think it was more about convenience and offering accessibility, because even a brand like HP in laptops, for example, was available in metros, but not available really in cities like Ajmer, right? Which is probably, 100 kilometers from Jaipur, tier 2 city. But still, I think the brand was not available there, right? Neither through retail nor e-commerce. So I think there was a huge opportunity to create accessibility for brands in tier 2 and 3 cities, right? So that was the driving factor for e-commerce back then. And I think over a period of time, obviously, convenience, accessibility remains an important factor. But I think the convenience has probably overtaken things, right? So today, even in Delhi, I don't really want to step out and go to Nehru Place to buy an IT gadget, right? Or a mobile phone. I find enough trust in the e-commerce ecosystem to kind of order a 40 or 60 or 80,000 rupees mobile phone, or probably a 1.5 lakh rupees laptop, right? And get it delivered to my house. So this was missing back then. But I think over a period of time, yes, I think the trust has gone up and the convenience has kind of become one of the main reasons for people to buy online. I think another thing that has evolved is, obviously, I think back then to acquire a customer, right? It used to be just Google, right? And the audience was limited to people really searching for your brand or the products, right? There was no Facebook advertisement. There was no Instagram, right? So it was very, very difficult to build a brand online as such, right? So for transaction driving businesses, I think it was still okay because you could spend on Google and few other platforms, right? So obviously, I think if you look at the e-commerce 1.0, it was mostly the platform play, right? Where platforms were selling already established brands, right? So which were more transactional. So the nature of, transaction was that, yes, people were aware of the brand and they were just searching, comparing online and then making the transaction online, right? But I think over a period of time, thanks to social media, content play and engaging with the consumer has become very, very important, right? So today, I mean, you can't really build a brand by spending on Google Ads, right? I mean, you need to engage with the consumer, and that communication has become two-way, right? Instead of one-way, which is absolutely transactional. So I think that's the major change. And that's why I believe that I think in last 4, 5, 6 years, the emergence of D2C has happened thanks to the social media, thanks to the opportunity that social media, I mean, social platforms like Instagram and Facebook have provided to create interesting content and engage with the consumers, right? So I think that's the major shift that has happened. And obviously, I think in last 2 years, thanks to Jio, number of people logging online either to consume content, and obviously, I think over a period of time, as the audience matures, I mean, they'll start transacting online as well, right? So the overall base of e-commerce consumers have only gone up, right? And will continue to grow for the next few years.
I totally agree. I think I moved back to India in 2013. I was doing my first investing job and looking at e-commerce companies then. And I remember asking my ex-boss, do you think Indians will buy clothes online in 2013? And sort of seeing the ecosystem evolve, I think two important things you said were trust and convenience, right? And that's changed the way people buy brands online and has led to the emergence of D2C and consumer brands that are online only. But I think, Itish, failure and learning is something people don't talk about enough when it comes to startups, right? We read the news, we celebrate funding rounds, we celebrate success. But my real learnings came from failing in offline and pivoting to D2C very fast in 2017 with Dr. Vaidya. What have been your biggest learnings through the long journey that you've had?
Look, so I think in India, there's this lot of stigma attached to failures, right? And as you rightly said, I think we celebrate success, but we don't celebrate the journey, right? And I think when you're running a startup, it becomes very, very important. I believe that there's no failure in a startup, right? I mean, if you're running a startup, I think that there could only be learning, and learning for you to kind of do better the next time. And that's what I believed in. I think with every startup that I've done, I've had an immense learning, right? And try to kind of use that learning in my next venture. And I think now, obviously, the startup ecosystem has evolved. It is a lot more, way more cooler to do startups. But again, I keep talking to kind of entrepreneurs who have just started out, right? I mean, companies are raising like 40, 50, 70 million Series A rounds, right? And that could be overwhelming for a lot of guys who are just starting out, right? And for a lot of them, especially in the tech space, right? I think it has become the driving factor. Right. So all of them, I mean, most of the entrepreneurs today start thinking that I'll probably launch this product, and on the idea, I'll probably raise some 10, 20, 30 million dollars. Right. And Series B would be $100 billion valuation in 2 years of launching my startup. Right. So I think the aspirations are very different. Right. But I think there is a risk. Right. There's a risk because you are not really building the business for the purpose, right? I mean, you're building the business to raise more and more capital, right? Which is probably not the right approach. So I think kind of scares me. I mean, could be my, 15 years experience as a startup entrepreneur, and I think a couple of failures as well. But then I believe that it is important to run a startup. It is absolutely okay to fail. It is absolutely okay to learn and restart, right? But then the objective of getting into a startup, right, should be very, very clear. And it should not be to raise capital. I mean, it should be to build value for everyone involved, right? And it should be to create something meaningful, something disruptive, right? And then, yes, obviously, I mean, raising capital to scale things up, raising capital to create wealth for yourself is all part of it, but should not be the sole objective, right, of doing a startup. And I think I personally believe that we should celebrate failures a lot more in India, right? And because I think it's healthy for the ecosystem, right? I mean, you can only have n number of unicorns, right? You need to have a lot of $10 million, $100 million, $50 million businesses as well, right? And they should not be looked down upon as failures, right? I mean, they should be looked up to because, yes, I think if you've created something meaningful, you are successful, right? So I think failure and success are part of game. You should be prepared when you're starting up. Yes, I think there will be failures, but I mean, you have to live with it, right? You have to learn from it. And that's what I have done with each of my ventures.
I think two key takeaways for me. One is celebrating failure, or at least sort of reflecting more on failure. And the other is overwhelming amount of capital and only caring about the capital or the success metrics rather than the journey or sort of the value that's being built. And those are learnings that you only get from experience. So Hitesh, coming to the man company now, men's grooming was basically inexistent when you guys started, right? So what got you excited about this seemingly large but new category?
I think blue ocean strategy opportunities have always excited me. So, I mean, even if you look at last three of my ventures, when I started Let's Buy, the idea was to disrupt the way e-commerce was being done in India. When I started Truly Madly, again, the idea was to disrupt the relationship dating space in India, right? Which was non-existent. I mean, which was dominated by a few of the matchmaking portals, right? Like Jeevan Sathi, Shaadi. But realized that there's a great opportunity to create something for millennials, right? To find their own partner. Similarly, I think when I decided to create a brand in consumer space, easier choice would have been to create a skincare company for women, already a large category, right? And I think the opportunity was to just create the right brand, right product, and go after it, right? But then, I mean, realized that probably that's not my cup of tea. I think I really wanted to create something which was non-existent, right? Or probably existent, but not big enough. And realized that men's grooming was one such category where there were few incumbents which are, I mean, Indian as well as global, but offering very, very few selected products. Like, I mean, probably shaving was one established category, but apart from that, it was either deodorants, fairness creams, but nothing beyond that, right? And realized that there's a good opportunity to create a niche experiential brand exclusively targeting men, right? So, yeah, so I think the opportunity sounded good. Obviously, I think mentally we were prepared that it is not going to be 0 to 100 in 3 years. It is going to take some time because building a brand, especially when you are creating a category, right? I mean, takes a lot of time, effort, iterations, right? Lot of learnings. But yeah, I think we were, both me, Bisham, and even Parvesh, I think all of us were prepared that we are in for a long haul and we'll have to be patient in terms of getting to the numbers. But we wanted to create a brand that we personally love, that our consumers love, and we enjoy building it. So yeah, so decided to go after an interesting category.
And you said patience, right? But I think category creation takes time, effort, and customer validation, right? And as you started your journey with the man company, what did you do differently as you were building the category?
Yes, so multiple things. So I think when we started the category, like I mentioned, I mean, category was almost, I think, inexistent. Beyond probably shaving and deodorant, there was nothing else, right? And the biggest challenge for us was to change the behavior of men who were just not involved in the category, right? So, I mean, traditionally, if you look at it, it is women of the house who has been buying the products like shampoo, body washes, soaps as part of their grocery shopping, right? So, and men end up using the same products which are there in the washroom, right? So they don't really get involved in the buying decision of this category, right? So we realized that I think that's the biggest challenge that we'll have to face, which is to change this behavior and involve and engage men with the category, right? So I think it was an interesting challenge to solve. One learning I had from my previous venture, which is Truly Madly, is the power of content, right? How to kind of build a brand using content. And I think that's the opportunity that we realized we had in our hand when we started Man Company, right? So instead of spending huge amount of money on tactical marketing just to acquire customers, we started investing a lot more on content creation from day one, right? So we created content around grooming tips. We created content around the product, how to use ingredients. So for example, we were one of the first brands to talk about sulfate and paraben free, right? And what are the harmful effects of sulfate and paraben on our body, right? And today, I mean, almost every brand talks about it. So I think we realized that we need to create a lot of education, a lot of awareness around the category on one side. And second, to build a brand, we realized that, especially in the non-existent category, we realized that we'll have to create that emotional connect with the consumer, right? Because today he's just not involved in the category. And if you're selling another fairness cream or another anti-dandruff shampoo, he'll probably use the product, but he'll still be connected to the brand till the time he needs that product, right? Once he doesn't have dandruff, he'll probably forget about the brand as well, right? So we didn't want to be in that space. So I think early on, we started investing heavily on brand as well through content. So we created a lot of interesting content, a lot of interesting campaigns right? And without really investing much on media, a lot of these videos went viral and kind of helped us in establishing the reach for the brand and creating some emotional connect with the consumer, right? So I think I would say these two things helped us a lot. And third, which we solved, I mean, the challenge that we had was just because men were not involved, they were not even talking about the products that they used, right? There was nothing for them to talk about, except for probably, I think, the watches that they wear or something like that. But when it came to personal care, they were just not discussing it, right? Because they were not involved in the category. So we realized that, I think, use the Instagram and Facebook effectively, right? And to create some virality, word of mouth for the brand, for the product, we need to invest heavily on the quality of product as well as the packaging, right? And since we wanted to build an experiential brand, and we created a very aspirational packaging, right, which looks very premium, very sleek. And I think when you order the products from our website, you get it in a fancy box with haystack, etc., right? And this is the experience that Indian men had never, ever kind of seen in their lifetime, right? So I think that created a wow factor around the brand. And a lot of men started sharing their pictures and unboxing videos on social media, tagging us, right? So sharing their pictures with a bottle of, let's say, beard oil or a shampoo or a fragrance, right? I think all these three factors kind of helped us in getting the initial traction for the brand. And I think that's what we did differently from a lot of incumbents who are used to kind of get a Bollywood celebrity, spend 100 crore media and launch a specific product, right? But without really creating that emotional connect. But that's something that I think we have been doing consistently, right?
And you talked about viral campaigns, right? And you have done sort of tens of memorable marketing campaigns through your journey. But I specifically remember the Ayushman Khurana one, which went viral. So what are your favorite two or three marketing campaigns that you've actually done through your various stints?
Yeah. Look, so I think a lot of favorites. Being a marketer, that's what my kind of top hat is. I love creating campaigns. I love consumer insights. So multiple campaigns. But yes, I think if I have to choose three, I would say, one that we did at Truly Madly, right, which was this Creep Kavali, where we collaborated with AIB, right? And I think the consumer insight there was a lot of women, right? So they end up getting spam messages on their Facebook Messenger, etc., right? So AIB, and we shared this insight as well as the pain point, considering I think whatever marketing we used to do at Truly Madly was targeting women. So, and we came up with this Creep Kavali, which was very, very interesting, won a lot of awards, went viral, right? And this was around 2014-15. So did exceptionally well for the brand. Second was the first PVC that we had launched, again for Truly Madly. And I think that again was very well received. Again, the insight there was how to kind of, and I think at Truly Madly, we did a lot of these breaking stereotype campaigns, right? Where we said, why should it always be the men to make a first move, right? Why can't it be a woman making the first move? So this TVC campaign that we did was something around that, which again worked really well, right? And third one is the Ayushman Gentleman Kise Kehte Hain. So that again was the campaign. That was basically a brand manifesto, right? That's what we stand for as a brand. And I think we talk to consumers a lot. We do a lot of focus groups. And in some of our focus groups, we realize that some of the keywords that our consumers or even consumers of, let's say, competing brand, they associate with, the keywords that they associate with man company were authentic, premium, honest, innovative, right? But then I think when we asked, I remember in one of these focus groups about the brand personality, right? And we showed different personalities. Almost 73% of users said, associated the brand with gentlemen, right? The word gentleman. And these were all like millennials, 25, 26 year olds. When we asked them to define the word gentleman, right? I think it was an eye-opener, honestly, for most of us in the team. So I think what we realized was for us, if you search for gentlemen on Google, right, and do image search, you'll see a suited, booted guy with a black tie, tuxedo, right, well-shaved, well-groomed. But when we spoke to these guys, we realized that the definition of gentleman has evolved over a period of time, right? So it is not just about what you wear. It is not just about your education or whether you're rich or poor, your profession, your sexuality, right? Whether you have a beard or whether you're clean shaven. It doesn't really matter about your outer looks, right? But what matters is what is there inside, right? So what are the values that you carry? And I think which is an interesting thing, right? Because today, obviously, if you're working in a tech, you're not really, no one cares what you're wearing, right? Or how you look, right? But what matters is those values. I mean, are you honest? Are you sincere? So I think those values haven't really changed. But yes, I think the look and feel of, the artificial values which were associated with gentlemen has kind of evolved, right? And that's what we stand for as a brand. So when we met Ayushmann for the first time, he asked us, kya karna chahte ho? Because he's the guy who is probably very, very closely, I think, associated with good content, right? He was very clear, I don't want to do an ad where I'm holding a product and talking about its 5 benefits, right? We told him, that's not the brand that we are. So we also believe in the power of content. And that's why I think we kind of were very, very keen in collaborating with you. And this is what we stand for. We shared with him the brand manifesto. And he said, isi pe kuch karte hain. He took 2 seconds to say, isi pe kuch karte hain. Why don't we do a poem on this? Right? And I want to write it. So obviously, we got excited. But then obviously, he co-authored it. So we got Gaurav Solanki on board, who wrote Article 15 for him. Right? And it was a simple, I think it was a too much of a risk for us. Because imagine first collaboration, you're spending lakh on the production, etc. And it's a 3-minute long video. No mention about the brand, no mention about the product. Right? Your brand is just there in the background. And we took the risk. I think we decided to launch it and it went crazily viral. I think we ended up getting more than 300 million views, went viral across WhatsApp, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, everywhere, right? And last year we won almost 7 awards, including few Blue Elephant for the same campaign. So I think creating interesting content that people resonate with is something that I love to do. And I think these are just 3 of the campaigns, but I'm sure there are few other campaigns, probably not as successful as these 3, but still, I really love kind of working on content. And fortunately for me, I think we've got an incredible marketing team at Man Company who believes in the vision that the founder has. And they help us with the ideation, coming up with crazy ideas and help us in executing them.
You know, a campaign has gone viral when it gets shared on your family WhatsApp groups. And I think this Ayushmann campaign got shared like multiple times on my family WhatsApp group. So it totally went viral. But I'm going to actually segue to something a little bit more technical. Right? And I get this question a lot. So I thought you'd be the best to ask it since you've seen brands evolve. You've worked on the marketing side and the brand side as well. How does a D2C brand at scale split between performance marketing and brand marketing? And is there really a magic number, or what are your thoughts on sort of how a brand should spend between these two?
Yes, so I think again, interesting question, but there's no one definite answer. It depends a lot on your expertise. It depends a lot on the category, on unit economics, on lifetime value, etc., right? But I believe that I think relying solely on performance marketing is a bit too risky, especially when I think Facebook is acting up, your effective CPMs are going up all the time, right? There are so many players with millions of dollars in the bank, right? So anyone can kind of overspend you. And then I think when you decide to shut the tap down, there is no water, right? your business, and that's how the performance marketing works, right? So it is more like a flowing tap, right? And once you stop it, then you'll see a huge drop in the overall business. So I believe that there has to be a right mix between performance and brand. I think, honestly, a very probably unpopular view, but I am a very, very strong believer of investing in brand early on, right? And I just can't emphasize the fact that every D2C, effectively, you are creating a brand, right? And you can't just create a brand by investing blindly on performance marketing. I think it is like exciting enough to get transactions and revenue. But then obviously there are diminishing returns to performance marketing unless you have invested on the brand early on, right? So yes, and now obviously, you see lot of, I think D2C brands who've just launched, but they've got their, the brand ethos right? They've got their brand purpose right. brands like Neiman's, Whole Truth. I mean, these are lovely brands, right? I mean, I just love the vision. In fact, interesting tidbit that I would probably like to share here as well. I think someone posted on Twitter, it was probably from Neiman's official handle or whatever, right? And this was, I think, two and a half years back. And one of my friend, he commented, "Kiar, this is exactly Allbirds, right?" And I commented, "Kiar, how can someone just launch Allbirds with a different brand name, right? I mean, you can't just copy the brand, the product, the design, the even the pricing, because Allbirds was $100 and Neiman's back then was, I think, $6,500, which was exactly $100, right? So I had that comment. And then I think I started getting some retargeting ads, very interesting ads, and I decided to buy a pair of shoes from them. I love the shoes so much, right? I love the brand, the packaging, and I was already wearing Allbirds, right? But I could figure out the difference, right? So it was, I think, just looking at it, I thought it's a replica of Allbirds. But when I started consuming that product, right, as a consumer, I fell in love with the brand. I tried to reach out to Taran, who is the founder, and I told him, "Yeah, I love the brand so much. I mean, you've created something which is fabulous. I've been wearing few well-known brand of shoes, but this pair has become my favorite, right?" And I ended up investing in the company as well, right? So it happened with me for the first time where I became a consumer first and then the investor later. But I think that's what I meant. Same with Whole Truth. I mean, I just ordered one pack because the founder is part of D2C Group and just wanted to try things out. Not a big fan of chocolate. I mean, fell in love with the product here. I mean, and not just me, my daughters, my wife, and not just the product, but the brand, the communication, right? So I think interesting to see some of these brands investing on the overall brand story early on. And I think that's what will probably reap in benefits for them in the long term, right? So there's no... I mean, and I'm sure, I think Neiman's also spend huge amount of money on performance marketing as well. But it is the way you spend it, right? It's the storytelling that matters the most. And obviously, I think the product love and brand love comes from the story love, storytelling, right? And the basic product hygiene. So which some of these brands have cracked so well. So which is very, very, I think, pleasing to see.
You know, I think from what you said, right, there is a law of diminishing returns to performance marketing. And I think the ecosystem is very different from the time that we started building, right? Like you started building in 2015, I started building in 2017. And that time you had to convince the customer to buy online. If they came online and they bought a product, there would be very few options. But today, the customer is buying online. But among the various options, they have to choose your brand. So the brand has to mean something. So I totally agree. And I also believe that actually brand can help in the efficiency of performance as well. So, you know, I wanted to ask you one question on team as well, right? Young founders like me start thinking that we can do everything on our own, but learn very quickly that we're nothing without our team. Tell us how you think about building strong team.
Well, I think any company, any startup is as good as its team here. I'm a strong believer that I think you need to have right people in your team, and not just at a core level, but all across. People who are culturally, I think, fitting in well, who believe in your vision and who are always, I mean, thinking ahead, right? Obviously, I think everyone makes, and I keep telling my team here as well, I mean, it's absolutely okay to make mistakes, right? Because unless you make mistakes, I mean, you don't really learn new stuff, right? So, and you don't really learn what not to be done next time, right? So it is absolutely okay to make mistakes. But I think what we look for is right attitude, right culture, right ethics. And then obviously, I think education, pedigree, etc. for us probably comes later, right? I think we somehow look for people who are entrepreneurial, right? I mean, who are self-driven. And I think it's just very, very important to have that positive vibe in the team when you are building a startup, right? Because a lot of times, I think if people don't believe in your vision, if they are just working for, let's say, salary, right? You don't really get that drive, right? And I think over a period of time, because there's so much pressure, you start seeing the cracks, right? So it's very important to hire people who are self-motivated and who are invested in the company for long period of time, right? I mean, who are willing to kind of play a long innings. So I think that's what we've done in our team. I mean, if you look at most of our business leads, I mean, they've been in the bid with us for minimum, 3 to 4 years, right? And we've given them enough equity in the business as well. So, I mean, most of them are, I think, very much invested in the business as well. In fact, last couple of years, and we generally give this option to most of our employees every year, whether they would like to kind of take during the appraisals, whether they would like to take the cash or the ESOPs or the mix of both, right? And few of them have taken only ESOPs in last couple of years, right? And so which just shows that, yes, I mean, team is equally committed to the vision. And as a result, I think they feel secure, we feel secure, and we are learning on our way. So yes, I think very, very important to get the right team in place, irrespective of whether you're creating a D2C brand or not. But for any business, I think team is what makes or breaks you.
I think what you said about incentivizing the team and bringing everyone on the same page is sort of really important, because everyone's eventually fighting together for the same audacious vision. Last question, Hitesh, actually, we were discussing this even before we started recording. D2C is, in India at least, is in a period of euphoria right now. It's exciting, but I think the market is also hot. So where do you see D2C in India going over the next 5-10 years?
No, I think it's an interesting space to be in here. I'm a very strong believer, and even when I started out, I think even when I exited LeftBuy, actually, I remember meeting a couple of my investor friends who were investors in LeftBuy. And even back then, I had this, I think, insight that India just don't have enough brands, right? And really wanted to kind of create something which is, I mean, probably the back then, not in the men's category, but yes, I wanted to create a brand which is made in India, but for the world, right? And I think in last few years, last 4 or 5 years, we've already seen that traction, right? We've already seen a few brands, I mean, even in terms of scale, crossing 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 crores, which is very, very exciting, because, I mean, no one would have thought that an Indian brand, I mean, that started probably just 3-4 years back, is now doing 500 crores or 1,000 crores, right? But some of these brands like Boat, etc., have already done that. So I remain a strong believer that, yes, I think today, customer is a lot more conscious. He knows what he's buying, right? And he's not just buying the product. He actually buys into the brand, right? So it's very, very important for the new age brands to associate with consumers at an emotional level, right? Which I believe the incumbents, right, are finding it very, very difficult to do, right? So it's not that today, I mean, Unilever cannot launch 10 different categories, 10 different products, brands, right? I mean, they have all the muscle power to do that. But it's the emotional connect, right? I mean, it's offering something, having that two-way communication with the consumer, which is completely missing when it comes to incumbents, right? And that's where I think most of the D2C brand will continue to create their niche. One thing that all of us will have to be very, very conscious about is that all of us are working on a high gross margin categories, right? So almost everyone is sitting at anywhere between 60 to 70% or even higher gross margin categories, right? If we are building a business which is a cash guzzler, or the business where the VC or private equity money becomes oxygen for building the brand, we may see few failures as well, which is absolutely okay. But then I think I'm a strong believer that if you're creating a brand, it needs to be nourished, it needs to be nurtured, right? And that takes time. So money cannot buy you the growth. I mean, it can buy you the numbers transaction in short to medium term, but then unless you've created the right brand values, it's very, very difficult to sustain over a period of time. Because end of the day, I think for all of us, a brand is going to be our biggest move, right? And building a brand takes time. So it's not easy. It's not something that can be built overnight by just throwing more cash into the business. So I think that's one thing that all of us should be, I mean, conscious and aware of. But apart from that, I believe that, yes, I think the next 10 years, at least this decade, is going to be, I'm very long on D2C. I believe that I think we will have a lot more D2C brands, and at least I think few unicorns in D2C space as well this year, right? So I'm pretty excited about the opportunity that the landscape offers.
And like you, I'm super bullish and excited to see what happens with the ecosystem. So Hitesh, before we end a tradition on my podcast, we end with a quick rapid fire round. So you just have to say the first thing that comes to your mind when I say these words. What's your favorite brand?
Neiman's.
What's your go-to brand at a grocery store?
Okay, my bad, because I haven't been to grocery store in over a year now. So
what's your go-to brand on Big Basket or Amazon?
So again, obviously, I'm in different categories. So Whole Truth, like I mentioned, I think I somehow have fallen in love with the brand. I don't know whether consuming one bar a day is right or not, but I've been doing that for the last few days. So right now, yes, I think Whole Truth is one of the favorite brands in the grocery category as such.
Got it. And this is an easy one, but I'm still going to ask it to you. Online or offline consumption?
Online, yeah. I think, look, so offline will always remain. I mean, I think the market is such, some categories will anyways, I think we'll get the scale in offline. So I would rather say omni-channel, yeah. So I think to scale beyond a certain level, yes, online and offline both will have to coexist.
Android or iOS?
iOS for last, 12 years, 10 years.
What's the app you spend the most time on?
Instagram.
Since we can't really travel right now, which is the first place you'll go to once the world opens?
Maldives, since my kids and I think whole family kind of love beaches, so...
Awesome. So it was amazing recording with you, Hitesh. Thanks for listening to all of you. Until the next episode, we'd love to hear back from you on feedback, questions, or anything else. I'm available on Instagram at AB Vaidya and on LinkedIn at Arjun Vaidya. And I'd love to chat. Don't forget to click the subscribe icon. And if you like what you heard, please click the share button and share with family and friends. We're nothing without our listeners. It's been an absolute pleasure, Hitesh. And I learned a lot through this episode. I'm sure our listeners would take too.
Thanks, Arjun. Thanks a lot.